Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. You know what?
What?
I feel buoyant today. Ebullient. I think that's the right use of the term.
Effervescent, maybe?
That too.
Okay.
I feel really sparkly. And you know, it's so different because the last 3 weeks, as you know, I've been kind of feeling the...
Morose.
Yeah, morose is heavy, but kind of weighty, you know, just the overall sense of the world. But today I feel really kind of light and breezy, and I owe it all, I think, to my weekend out in the desert. It was really uplifting. And then I'm leaving again this week to go visit a friend in Boise who I haven't seen in 5 years. And so for the first time in a long time, I'm just kind of feeling light and airy and enthusiastic and ready to take on the day.
Well, cool.
I know. How about you?
Happy to be in an air-conditioning studio right now.
I know. We have that going for us, too.
Yeah, and I just heard Bree give a weather forecast a few minutes ago, and she said it was 103 outside, so I might take my lunch in the station today.
Don't tell people how cool it is in here, because then they'll all want to come hang out with us. But I do have a backpack full of work after the show. I'm just going to hang out and grade papers.
Okay. Well, where are we off to today?
Well, in light of how heavy things have been the last few months, the last year, I wanted to talk about the relationship between fathers and daughters and the role that fathers play in helping to guide their daughters into adulthood. Because we spend a lot of time focusing on parenting in general, just like the overall topic of parenting. We talk a lot about mothers and their impact in raising their children. 2/3 of all child-rearing responsibilities fall to mothers. So we tend to focus a lot on their influence and impact on their children. But we don't talk a lot about the role that fathers play. And then I think it's very indicative of the way our society sets things up, that men are seen primarily as the wage earners, that there's not a lot of expectation that they're going to do hands-on work. And although it is shifting, 8% of the stay-at-home parents today are men, so it is shifting, but it's not 98% of the child-rearing. It's still a small amount. And so we don't really encourage men to take a hands-on role in raising their daughters, and we don't really talk about that game plan. What are those things that young girls need to learn from their fathers? What kind of modeling do they need from their fathers so that when they enter the world on their own, when they go out and make life choices, partner choices, career choices, what influence will their father have been on those choices? And they're huge because from a systems therapist perspective, we pass along generation to generation to generation patterns of behavior, patterns of choice making, patterns of partner choosing. What happens in our family of origin influences the choices we make in our adult life. So father's behavior has a huge impact on the choices their daughters will make in their life. And we don't talk about that a lot. And we don't give men, fathers, enough credit for the influence and importance they have in their daughters' lives. And I think we need to talk about it and empower men to feel like you do matter. You know, women, mothers in general, tend to have a tendency to gatekeep, which means they're really good at multitasking and jumping in and getting things done for the kids or, you know, doing the disciplining. But that means they're kind of blocking out their spouse, their husband, from getting in and actually helping out. And fathers do things differently. They raise children differently. They might not put the diaper on the same way. They tend to be the ones who roughhouse more. They tend to be the ones who do more physical play. They have a whole different relationship with their children. And so it takes work by the mother and the father to make space for the other person to have relationships with their children. So that's what's on my mind today. And I think it's extra important to have this conversation today because there is this kind of rising up, this bubbling up of misogyny, anti-women sentiment, a lot of, you know, talk of sexual assault and abuse of women and high-profile men behaving badly. And a lot of these high-profile men have daughters themselves. And what kind of messages have they passed on to their daughter by their behavior? And when you have a culture that has strong, powerful men behaving inappropriately towards women, What does that do to all of the young women who are coming up? How do they look out into the world around them and feel safe or feel empowered or feel like they have a place? And if we don't talk about it and we set all these young women out into the world without a strong sense of connection to the men in their lives, then we're setting them up to have challenging relationships with the men that they choose to have in their lives. So that's what's on my mind today. And I am looking forward to opening up the conversation. I have two guests in the studio with me today, Dr. Eric Simon and his daughter Malia. And they've graciously agreed to come in and talk about their relationship and from their perspective and how things have been and what they would like to see being done differently or the same out in the world. And Malia has also written and published a book, a novel, at 17 years old. And so we're going to talk about that and what kind of environment do you have to have in a household to make room for and encourage a young woman to actually get a book written and published and take that out into the world. So I'm really excited to talk to them about their relationship and get their thoughts. But we'll also be opening up the phone to take your calls in a little bit. Our number is 805-781-3875. And you can also be part of the conversation by liking our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. If you like the page, I update the show every week and put up links to different information. You can also leave a message there or start a conversation. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And if you'd like to listen to previous shows, you can visit kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. And all of the shows are there from the last 6 years, so you can listen to your heart's content. And if you'd like to have the shows uploaded to your device, please visit Apple Podcasts or NPR One and search A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Subscribe, write a review, and help us promote the show. So that's where we are today. And I think we're good for now. So we'll take a breather and we'll come back and start this conversation. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist.
When you need me, call my name. 'Cause without you, my life just wouldn't be the same. If you want me, them sunny skies are rain. When you need me, just call my name.
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. And I'd like to welcome my guest today, Malia Simon. How are you doing, Malia?
Doing well. How about you?
I'm good. I'm excited to have you here. Malia is a high school senior at Arroyo Grande High School. She is an author and a writer. She is a runner, co-president of the philosophy club at school, which I would love to have time to talk about that as well. What leads someone your age to go into philosophy? You're a passionate cook and chef, and on your way to having kind of a stellar academic career as well.
Hope so, yeah.
But I think your senior year, it's all kind of compressing down on you pretty quickly at this point.
Yeah, definitely. I think everyone in my grade is kind of in a bubble of stress right now.
I know. I guess even though you see it coming going into senior year, it's probably still hard to be ready for how much work it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like we've been waiting for this moment since the time we started going to school. But it'll be over in a couple months. We'll all settle down. We'll know where we're going to school.
I know. And the great wait will be over. And then in the meantime, you have this book you've written that we're going to talk about a little bit. And kind of you're probably just at the beginning of where having written this novel is taking you as well. I'm sure that you're just starting the journey and promoting the book and seeing.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I just got an ebook version out. So that's pretty big because I've been consulting with one of my grandma's friends who's a published author on Amazon. And he's been helping me a lot with the marketing stuff, and he was telling me how big an ebook is because it's a new audience of readers now who do the Kindle and that kind of thing.
Right, because probably, I don't know what the percentage is, but I'm sure quite a few people don't pick up a hard copy anymore.
Right, yeah. And I was just going to say the royalties are much better too for ebooks because it costs them virtually nothing to, there's no printing involved.
So you didn't put budding businesswoman on your, because you have that now that you're learning all the marketing and business part.
Yeah.
So fantastic. The book is called Both Hands for Me. And Malia and I are joined in the studio by her father, Dr. Eric Simon. Hi, Eric.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having us here.
Oh, no, I'm really happy, and I appreciate you both taking the time to come in. And Eric is a clinical and forensic psychologist practicing here on the Central Coast. He is the father of two daughters, so he has some experience with our topic today, professionally and personally. He's also a distance runner and just got done doing some surfing, I imagine, today. It looks like he just got off the beach.
I'm alive.
So every trip out into the ocean, you're happy to make it out again?
Yeah, you don't always know.
Well, so let's start off with, I'm going to start with you, Eric, about personally before professionally. What has it been like raising daughters? And do you think the climate in our culture has changed recently?
Well, it's been an absolute joy to have raised and to continue to raise two daughters. And yes, certainly the climate has changed so much for the worse, obviously. What can we say about that? It's very upsetting.
So when you had your first daughter, when you started off this journey of parenthood with your wife, what was your expectations? Like, how did you envision your role in the girls' lives back with probably 20-something years ago?
Well, my wife, Beth, who is also a clinical psychologist, she and I were living in Hawaii at the time when both of the girls were born, and we moved here to the Central Coast in 2000 when Hannah, our older daughter, was about 2 and Malia was 6 months or so. And we had a very intentional, we created a very intentional lifestyle. We could have lived anywhere. I served in the Army for 4 years as a psychologist and a captain. And at the end of that, they give you a separation move so they can move you anywhere in the country. And we knew we wanted to live in California. And we had, while we were in Hawaii, we crystallized a lifestyle that we wanted. We wanted a place that had great climate and that a place where you could, a place that didn't have much crime or traffic at the time.
At the time.
and a place where you could get some land. And a place that was, that had some culture. And, of course, being close to Cal Poly does that for us here. And we went up and down the state of California, and we'd lived in California before, and it was a no-brainer, really. I mean, this was the only place in California that met all those variables. And so we bought a great piece of property and turned it into a family farm, a small family farm. And that was a big part of our vision. A lot of it had to do with how we wanted to raise our daughters, and for me as a father, I'm choking up now. It was centrally important, and still is, for me to be a family man.
I imagine as Malia is going through her senior year, and you have one daughter already launched. I mean, that finality, right? The story of, it seems like yesterday we looked for this property to start our family, and now I'm talking about it in hindsight, and that goes so quickly. That trip, right, from beginning your family to launching them out, and then what comes after that. And so in this period of time, in the 17 years, you've created this family farm and raised these daughters. What were some of the goals you had for your role in their life, or what did you want them to leave your family farm with as they moved out into the world? What values or gifts or lessons?
Well, there was a lot to it. One of the things was the goal was for them to have a real connection to nature and the land and life and death. And we felt like nothing does that like living on a farm. You see, and Malia could probably talk some about that too if you'd like. Malia?
Yeah, sure. Well, a lot of it had to do with the animals and, you know, that reconciliation with this is what happens, it's not catastrophic. I mean, we would have funerals for our chickens where we'd put flowers into the graves and that kind of thing, but, you know, it was never such a huge deal because we had so many animals. I mean, we'd buy 26 chickens at a time, but also because that was the cycle of life, and as soon as, you know, we were down to a couple hens, we would buy a new flock and we would raise those ones. And my sister and I got very close to the animals, but it wasn't, you know, and such an idealistic thing where these are our pets and they're never going to die. It was more like we'll love each new flock that comes in.
Right. So this idea that the natural progression of life became just a part of your everyday reality.
Yeah.
Although I want to interject to say that they most certainly were pets. And I had it in my mind that, you know, we might have chicken stew sometimes, and that was the girls made it very clear that that was not going to happen.
Yeah. So that was one step too far.
So as much as you can accept their natural passing, you were not going to see them as dinner.
Yeah, right.
We enjoyed the eggs very much.
Yeah. And so you wanted to instill in the girls a connection with nature and an understanding of the life cycle of birth to death. And then what other things, you know, because I guess in my head I'm imagining, I don't think my husband and I ever sat and had an intentional conversation about what are this list of 10 things we'd like our daughters, because we also have raised two daughters, we want them to leave the house with. The only thing I think I was really clear with my husband was your relationship with them is going to determine the type of men they choose or partners they choose in their life, and how you treat them and how they feel about themselves with you and how comfortable they feel with you is going to really impact how they make choices. Like that I got, and we talked about that a lot and made sure he was spending a lot of time with them, you know, teaching them things and taking them out on adventures and, you know, really developing this tight connection, just the two of them, and not kind of filtered through me. Because what happens a lot in traditional families is daughter's relationship is kind of filtered right through the mom to their dad and not often direct. So we had that. But as far as like the day-to-day wanting them to have certain skills to tools they could use, I don't remember sitting and talking about that. I mean, did you get that detailed in what you wanted the girls to know?
I don't think we did. A lot of it we just, you know, kind of figured out along the way. And also, I'm very clear that we both, and I in particular, when I say we, my wife and I, but I in particular, have had and continue to have a lot of aspirations of how I want to be as a father. Mm-hmm. And on really good days, I hit it. So I'm sure I fail much more than I succeed.
And unfortunately, as we all know, you don't know how much you failed or succeeded until your children have children of their own. And then you kind of see how well.
Good point.
Yeah. it's hard to have a real-time understanding. And so, Malia, from your perspective as being the daughter of a father at 17 years old, and I'm sure you have a strong group of friends or people, young people you've grown up with, how does your dad measure up to what your friends have experienced with their dad?
From my experience, I mean, obviously I'm biased, but
that's okay.
I think that I've been raised really well. I think that one of the main things that especially my father raised me with was integrity. And so I wouldn't say that I was guided in any direction on what to choose in my life, but I think that I was guided on how to make that choice and to make sure that it was my own. Mm-hmm. And while, of course, sometimes your parents will influence you, I think that he really tried to let me make my own decisions. And more than just that, but make sure that the decisions I was making were for me. And, I mean, that was true for writing. That was true for running a lot. I mean, that's in sports, especially in high school, and your parents are in the stands and you're competing. That can be hard, but I always found that I would race so much better when it was really just for me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's not really a selfish thing. I think that's a natural thing. I think that's right.
So you, as much as you felt the support of your parents, you didn't feel kind of the parents that were living vicariously through your sports success or your academic success.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's hard for parents to step back and just make it about their children, right? Because we are so invested in their success. It's hard to give them the space to just do it for the pleasure and not feel like, that's my child.
I couldn't agree more. And that's one of those aspirational things. I have this ideal of autonomy. That's, you know, when you ask what, how do you think about parenting, I think of that as the most important item as a parent, as you want to relate to your child from the very beginning as an autonomous being, somebody who is separate from you. And of course, they need lots and lots of attention and rearing and structure. But hopefully, you're doing it from a position of emotional autonomy, where you don't own them and they don't belong to you. And the challenge, of course, is you love them so much that you don't want them to be separate. You want them. You want to wrap them up and put them in your pocket. So to me, that's the greatest challenge. And as I say, only on my very best days do I think I succeed on that.
So let's talk a bit about the book, Both Hands for Me. And before we started the show, I'd asked your dad, Eric, about his own writing history, you know, that if you had been a published author, because I wondered if this writing skill was something that had been passed down from generation to generation. You've had some academic writing experience. I mean, you've published work, so it wasn't completely foreign that published authors would live in your house.
Well, I have published quite a bit in the scientific, medical, and psychology literature, but what Malia does is totally different, and she did not get that from me at all. And her skills are I don't possess or would ever come close to, I don't think.
So it's just the ability to make a sentence is about as far as you were able to hand down. Putting together the sentence structure maybe was about the gift level for you and Malia.
At the most.
Oh, okay. Like your dad's giving you high praise there. So tell me what inspired you to start writing.
Well, to start writing in general, I honestly feel like I've always been writing. I honestly can't punctuate it anywhere. I started writing stories when I was in third, fourth, fifth grade. I would enter these writing contests that we would have around here, and I think that's really good for the confidence of young writers. I honestly think that's a lot to do with why I kept writing, because I mean, you get praise from your teachers when you're good, maybe, but you know, you don't really have the thought that, oh, maybe I could really start doing this until you get some recognition, and so that, I guess, helped. And I think, to be honest, to start writing a book was just the next thing for me to do. I was a writer before the book was written. I was a writer before it was published. It was what was supposed to happen.
So it didn't feel like you made a conscious decision, oh, and now I'm going to do this. It just kind of flowed from
Pretty much, yeah.
If you're just tuning in, my guests today are Dr. Eric Simon and his daughter, Malia Simon. We're talking about fathers and daughters and their relationships and the importance of that connection in helping young women to find their way, especially at a time in our culture when it's not as friendly for young women as we hope it would be. And so what are the gifts and tools our young girls and young women need to learn from their fathers to be prepared to stand up for themselves, to feel confident, and to thrive in a culture that is not as supportive as it needs to be, and in some ways, frankly, is incredibly terrifying for young women. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And so, Malia, talk a little bit about the story itself.
So the story revolves around a young girl or a young woman named Thaisa. And basically, she's on a suicide mission set by her father, who commits suicide. And she has to pass on this message from him. And the idea is that once she finds one person who believes her, then she's allowed to end her life too, which is kind of a sick thing. But this is what she carries with her. This is the burden that she carries with her. And she takes this information to the homeless. And she meets this homeless boy, this armless homeless boy, and they end up traveling around together. And I think the question of the story becomes, you know, will human connection trump that? Will that be enough to get her off this track?
That she was feeling like she was going to commit suicide, just like her father had when she delivered the message.
Right, and it seems at the beginning that this boy who she's traveling with could be the one person that's going to believe her, in which case that would set him on the suicide track as well.
So having read the book, it's a heavy read. There's clearly a lot of philosophical thoughts making sense from someone now, knowing that you're part of the philosophy club. I mean, kind of some deep philosophical questions about mankind and the continuation of the species, some really heavy conversations or thoughts about mental health and about suicide. And so I guess I'm curious to know, like, your personal experiences that touched into the story.
Yeah, so I think that for me, I've had experience with obsession, with, you know, fixation, and I think that a big theme in the book is drawing parallels between religion and obsession, I am an atheist, but from the standpoint of the book, it's not exactly saying, oh, I'm an atheist, people shouldn't believe in God. It's more saying that everyone does, but I think that it's destructive that everyone does, and that I have, and I do, and that, you know, when she's in the church and she's feeling what they're feeling, I think it's this powerful connection between people's nature to obsess.
Mm-hmm. So you could kind of felt that from your own life and drew that into the character.
Yes.
And so The topics of mental health and suicidal ideation, I mean, is that, having grown up in a home of psychologists, where I imagine there's a lot of pretty lofty conversations about mental health and mental well-being and mental illness and maybe suicide, I mean, does this conversations you had with your parents, or is this your own personal experience?
Much of it is my own personal experience. I think, if anything, the influence from my parents would be, you know, teaching me how to be introspective and how to try to understand myself. Because, I mean, writing this book was pretty therapeutic for me. And so it wasn't exactly the thoughts, but maybe more the way of thinking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because in order to write these characters and write this story, I mean, clearly you had to have had kind of some of these dire feelings about the progression of humanity on the planet. And those are some heavy feelings to carry, I think, for a young person. And it makes me sad and a bit concerned that I think a lot of maybe the education that you're receiving are messages quite often of the end is coming, the earth can't sustain. You know, environmental studies classes are maybe less about, you know, environmental protection and more about environmental destruction. Like, I wonder how that constant message for your generation of impending doom has impacted your sense of your future and influence the book.
Yeah, definitely throughout the book, that huge burden there on her, on the young person's back of, you know, what's to come. But I think that one of the messages towards the end is that it's a lot of what we do with our own lives is in our hands, you know, so to speak. And I think that, I mean, going back to what we were talking about earlier, I think that it's deciding whether or not we're going to do things for our parents, do things for the world, or we're going to do things for ourselves. And, you know, is that, and that's a lot actually of where the title comes from, is both hands for me. Is that selfish, or is that, I mean, your hands do belong to yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it's part of the age, too, that when you're 17, you're supposed to be kind of self-centric. You're launching yourself into the world. You're taking all the information that you've learned from your family and your parents, but you're launching off for the first time fully autonomously from your parents. And so I think there is that kind of that self introspection that is important. And then I guess at some time it opens up again, maybe when you have your own children or there's something else where you become outward focused.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say that the message was to not be outward focused, because I think that the two people in the book were very focused on each other, which was one of the intense things, but maybe possessed by yourself is a better way of putting it on my part. And I think that's a big part of coming of age. And in fact, a lot of this book, it's hard for me to read because, you know, it was written in a time where I was not in a good place. And reading it now, I feel so much older reading it, because it's just like, it's this stark contrast between like that regress state versus now. And it's just like, it's an interesting thing to read. It's like looking at old photographs of yourself.
Right. It's almost like publishing a part of your journal.
Yeah.
Right. Of a period of time. Because you wrote this between the ages of 14 and 16, and now you're 17. And those are really impactful coming of age, developing years. It'll be something that you'll carry with you forever, kind of that memory of a time period. And maybe in some ways writing the book was gave you the ability to take that time where you were struggling and put a bow on it and say, and you can live in this book and I'm going to move on with my life.
Yeah, yes. And I was definitely inspired by other writers who had done similar things. I mean, Sylvia Plath, that kind of thing. I think it's...
Although her story didn't end up probably...
Yeah, not...
Much yours
not exactly the same ending, yeah. But... Yeah, it can be therapeutic.
My guests today are Malia Simon and her father, Dr. Eric Simon. Malia's book is called Both Hands for Me, and it's available on Amazon now also as an ebook. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And we're talking about fathers and daughters and their relationships and the importance of fathers in the lives of their daughters and how we as a community and as a society need to esteem the role of fathers and encourage fathers to take active roles in their daughters' lives. And we're going to talk about what are some of those specific steps fathers can take to be more active and get involved with their daughters. Our number is 805-781-3875. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls.
I'll be there to guide you when trouble walks beside you. If you need me, I'll be there. And when this dirty world has been cold to, I got two strong arms waiting to hold you. And when those mean days come along, we'll stand together and we'll take them on. So if you need me, just call my name.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. And the question on the table today is, what is the role of fathers in the lives of their daughters? And if you're a father of daughters, what are some things you've done to help build closeness in the relationship? And maybe what are some ways you've struggled to make that connection, to feel as close as you'd like to? And I guess there's a third question on the table. Is it, given our current cultural climate with the level of misogyny and sexual inappropriateness that's being modeled by men in powerful places, what lessons do we need our daughters to learn so that they can thrive and come out into the world and not be frightened? And personally, you know, my biggest concern is that my 21-year-old who's going to be graduating this year and going out into the world, not only has the college campus been a place that's almost frightening for young women. I mean, that's unfortunate in itself, but it's not like she'll be leaving the college campus, which is fraught with a lot of sexual inappropriateness, but now into the greater culture where she's seen men in power who are also modeling a very little regard to women, for women. So I guess, Eric, I'd love to hear your take on this. I mean, have you felt that you needed to parent differently given the world that your girls are graduating and moving out into?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know that that per se influenced the way that I raised them, but I will say, first and foremost, I chose intentionally to marry a very strong, assertive woman. And so that's a big deal. I mean, that's one of the biggest pieces in raising girls, is if they have a strong female figure and they see that, oh, that's normal. That's okay. It's okay to assert for yourself. And my wife is not somebody who hates men. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women do. And so, and I don't hate women. And so because of that combination, I think they ended up relatively sane with regard to that kind of stuff.
But let's take it outside of your family then personally, and let's talk about it professionally. With families that you're seeing or clients you're seeing, if someone, a man came into your office today and he said, you know, I don't know what to say to my daughter. I want to tell her, you know, don't dress inappropriately, or it's, you know, your fault, or don't ask for it, or I don't want her to leave home because I'm afraid of her being attacked, or, you know, what is your counsel as a psychologist and from a professional stance for men today?
Well, I think it's so complicated. I think that some of it has to do with the particular child that you're raising, and each child is different. You know, from the time they pop out, they have different temperaments, and the way that temperament intersects in the social space with the parents, the personality develops. And so they have different needs. And so to a large extent, I've approached things differently with each of my daughters based on what I felt they needed. So I'm losing track of the question. I was about to say in Malia's case, but
professionally, if you have a father who comes in as a client and says, I don't know where to go with this. How do I build a bridge or a relationship with my daughter? And how do I send her out into a world that I find inherently frightening for young women?
So with regard to the first part, I would say that the two most important pieces are, number one, be physically available to be there. And a lot of dads are just so busy working as the breadwinner and climbing up the ladder of career success that they lose track of how important it is to just be there. And then the second piece is to not just be there physically, but be emotionally available. And that's where a lot of dads, I think, struggle too. And so I would suggest that you listen a lot more than you talk. Just observe. And as much as you can, try to let your daughter lead the way. And she'll communicate to you what she needs from you.
If you're capable of hearing it, because I think for a lot of dads, they're afraid of what their daughters are going to tell them, you know, that they're frightened maybe to hear that she's feeling depressed or feeling frightened or feeling overwhelmed or feeling pressured sexually. I mean, I just imagine fathers hearing those statements from their daughters as much as you want to be there. How can you hold that and hear that and not let your fear take over?
Right. And there, again, it goes back to the different personalities. So with one of my daughters, I felt like it would be more productive, more profitable to really let my wife take the lead. That when I tried to guide her about certain things, it made it worse, you know, with regard to boys and, and things like that. With one of my other daughters, she was able to just hear it and do with it what she would, but it wouldn't for whatever variety of reasons. So because of that, I would continue to, be more active in that way as a dad with her.
So in some ways, you had it a little bit easy because you had the fallback of a strong wife, kind of had your back the whole time, which kind of goes back to my original thought at the beginning of the show, is that two-thirds of our child-rearing falls to mothers, which in some ways does a disservice to fathers who really could do just as much. But I think there is still that social expectation that take it for what it's worth, that I think men get a pass quite often, that if it gets a little too difficult, they can pass it on and say, well, my wife will be able to handle that.
Yeah, so, in previous decades, the way the power differentials were set up, women couldn't work,
right,
and men couldn't raise the children. And a lot of people don't think about it that way, that this wasn't a good deal for men either.
No.
So with the feminist revolution, it was a wonderful thing, and now women can work, and now fathers can not just work but also raise children. And so there's growing pains that come along the way, and my advice to fathers would be that sometimes you need to fight for your place. And, mothers are it comes so natural, it's so instinctive to take care of the child that they can by default just kind of take care of it all. And so I can remember in the beginning with my first daughter, it was all mommy and me, as it often is.
Yeah.
And I said to my wife, well, I would like to be the one to put her to sleep every night. And I would, read her stories and sing her songs. And that was hard for my wife
to
give up, because it was such a precious
time. It's the best part of the day after you've been doing the hard work.
And she told me that it was really hard for her to give that up. But to her credit, she did. Mm-hmm. And that was really important.
Well, I think that's one of the challenges of, we talk about the feminist movement, all things changed. All things changed for women, the opportunity to work. But it didn't mean that although women were going to work, now the childcare was shared. I mean, that we haven't caught up with.
Right.
That shift hasn't been there. And I think it is because men haven't been encouraged to step up and to find their role. And I'm curious, Malia, as you hear the conversation and you're getting ready to graduate from high school, maybe this whole idea of partnering and parenting is way down the road, but do you think about, that role of having a partner, raising a child, and kind of the fathering role?
Yeah, I think that my parents have been good models. I think that our family in general has come a long way. At first, we were maybe more split, where it was one parent with one daughter, one parent. But, as my sister and I got older, I think it's become more of a unit. And I think in the beginning, maybe a lot of us thought that this is how it's going to be forever. We're going to be split. But it really does change as you get older. And for me, realizing, because I've always identified a lot with my father, but for me, realizing, I mean, just recently, actually, that I'm a lot like my mother, and one doesn't have to be sacrificed for the other.
It's very mature of you, because I think it takes a while to sometimes recognize the value of both parents and their role in our lives. I guess this idea of that role of fathers and daughters, and what are the things that fathers can do? Because I think one of the things that prevents dads from taking an active role is not really knowing where they can step in. So I'm curious to know what you're hearing right now. If you're a father or married to someone who's a father, our number is 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. How do you experience that connection between father and daughter? And Bree, you're the daughter with a father. And when we were talking about the show before we went on today, when you asked me, what's the topic today? And I said, fathers and daughters. And your first reaction was, oh, I have a lot I can say about that.
Yeah, so, I do have a father. I can confirm that.
So how was that for you? Did you see him trying really hard and succeeding? Or how is that relationship?
Well, my dad, I love him dearly. And I'm sure he would say the same about me. I know, Eric, you mentioned that some fathers kind of have a difficulty connecting with daughters, like on the emotional level, and that's kind of runs the same way with my dad. But I mean, I think some of it had to be, I had to make an effort to kind of reach out to him on his level too. I follow sports just so I can kind of have something to talk about with him that's kind of on his level, and he'll do the kind of the same for me. He'll like kind of learn about radio a little bit, and just kind of recognizing the things he does do to say he loves me. Like I remember being a teenager and being like mad at him because he wasn't paying a lot of attention to me, but he was, you know, it was in the middle of a recession. My parents had a business at the time, and it was difficult for him to pay attention to me while I was going through puberty because he was really busy with that. But he got a job in another city, and then I moved off to college, and I realized he would say good morning to me every morning, and he would go into while I was sleeping and like kiss me on the forehead and say good morning and I love you, but I was like unconscious the whole time. So he started, once I went off to college and he didn't see me every morning, he would send me a text every morning saying good morning and I love you. And he did this, he still does it, he did it this morning, and I'll say, now that I'm not like sleeping, I can respond to him and say good morning and I love you and I hope you have a good day. And just doing the little things like that. My dad, every time he comes and visits, he's always, even though he doesn't like talk to me on like an emotional level, he'll be like, how's your car doing? And I'll be like, okay, that's how he's showing he loves me, is that he's making sure my car runs safely.
Well, and I love that message because it's about the consistency. You know, I think for a lot of dads, they'll make some attempts to connect, and if their teenage daughter rebuffs them, you know, like you're dumb or don't be stupid, a lot of dads will feel discouraged and give up and stop trying. Mm-hmm. And I think the message would be keep trying, even if you think it's annoying, you know, even if your daughter doesn't respond immediately and appreciate it, do it because you know it's the right thing and you want to, in the long run, have her know you were always there for her. And I think that's the hard lesson, is that especially when you're talking about teenagers who are kind of going through their own period of adjustment into, you know, through life, that you have to just keep trying. I can remember my dad, I played the guitar and I would sing, and I'd be in my room writing songs and singing my heart out. And then my dad would go down the hall and I'd hear him outside my door kind of like singing along. And I thought he was mocking me, you know, kind of teasing me, and I'd get really hurt and then I wouldn't want to sing anymore. And it took me a long time to realize that he was trying to let me know he was listening and being encouraging, but he never stopped trying. And I think that's what saved us, is that even though I was annoying and rebuffed him or thought he was trying to be mean, he kept coming back and trying to connect. Do you remember that period of time now that you're all of 17?
Yeah, definitely that resonates with me. And I think, wasn't it my mom's father who said, I'm there for her to push me away?
Right.
Which sounds discouraging, but I think that you get over that when you grow older, and it's kind of a necessary phase.
Mm-hmm. There is that part where you're, again, the autonomy that you're finding, and you're pushing dad back a little bit, but really inside you're going, don't go away.
Right.
Even though I'm being awful, still love me. And yeah. I think that's part of that teenage growth, is that teenagers are testing to see if they're still lovable. And so they test parents. And I think dads are more apt to get their feelings hurt and retreat because we don't have, you know, there's that transition for dads and daughters from my little girl and my sweet thing, and then all of a sudden that sexuality buds, and now you're dating people, and like, what is this relationship with my dad? It can feel a little creepy, and then dads retreat because they're not sure, and it's hard to navigate that, and then more difficult to come out the other side. So Eric, here's some things that I found about things dads can do. Play sports together with their daughter. Find a shared sport or something that you enjoy together, and share that love with her. And it sounds like running is something that you've shared with the girls. Find a project to do together, like build something or fix something or create something or cook something together. And the third one was to take a trip together. Just the two of you have some adventures you go on.
Yes, all of that. And I would add that... you know, again, to I guess as advice to fathers out there, mm-hmm. to let your curiosity guide you as you're interacting with your daughter, and let your own sense of joy and fun guide you. So you mentioned sports, just as a for instance. I'm a pretty competitive person, and we had this foosball table, and I see we have a caller on the line, so I'll make
continue.
This short.
Yeah.
It would have been kind of boring for me to play, you know, to let them win. You know, they're learning how to play the game, and yet you want them to have a sense of increased efficacy about it, that they're getting better. And so what I did was we would play to 10, but they would start off with 9, and I would start off with 0. So if they scored one goal before I scored 10, they would beat me, and I would play all out to beat them. It mattered to me. I wanted to beat them, and they could feel that. And so it was so exciting for them to play. They could feel that intensity, and they would win a lot of the time, or, you know. So that's part of it. And another game we did was we called Save the Day Barbies. This was a version of a game that I didn't have Barbies, of course, when I was a kid. But I would have these, you know, $6 million man figures and army things and things like that I would throw up into the tree, and they would get stuck. And then I would have to send the next guy over to try to knock the first guy free, and then of course they would both get stuck, and then you're throwing a football to knock them down, and that would get stuck, and then, you know, eventually you'd get the biggest possible thing and try to knock everything down. And so with my daughters, that became Barbies.
That's really
and
funny.
So I didn't think so much in terms of daughters, but just what's fun, what's going to be fun for me with my time with them. So
right, let's play.
Right, exactly.
And modeling that play is so important, because again, fathers interact with their daughters differently than their mothers do, and both are important and beneficial. Our number is 805-781-3875. Susan, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi there.
Hi.
I had an interesting relationship with my dad. You know, he really tried to connect, but we just continually failed, you know, on that. And he was a great conversation ender. So I would tell him, I would tell him something, and he would say, well, anybody could think that, or anybody could do that. I mean, he would just do something to completely end the conversation. And he really regretted that at the end of his life, and he still, you know, died not knowing how to connect or what to do or how we could do anything. But we never did anything fun or recreational or any way to connect like that. And even in my young life, I knew that if he didn't find it within himself to forgive my mother for, you know, for whatever, that it would never happen. And that's what happened. But, you know, he just never could, you know. So when he was on his deathbed, he said, you know, forgive me for not being able to forgive your mother. So, you know, he associated with me, him, myself with her, and he couldn't see any of my good points. You know, he really just, when he didn't get custody, he just totally gave up, and then he couldn't see anything good about me at all after that. You know, it was really sad.
You know, Susan, I appreciate you sharing that, because I think your story resonates with a lot of women of the generation of divorce, and that fathers were in a lot of ways pushed out of the system once they lost custody, that there were no avenues for them to fight, and because we don't have a society that tells dads that they're of value to their daughter's life. You know, so as long as their mom is still in their life, they've got everything they need. And I think that was a disservice for a lot of fathers to hear that.
Yeah, it was sad for him. So, you know, I just told him, well, you know, I love you so much, and love is all that really matters, Dad. You know, so hopefully it helped him pass on.
That's beautiful, Susan. Thank you for taking the time to call. And I believe that Susan's story is not unique.
No, and I have a short snippet of a story that might be helpful for her, which is, and this was about a mother, but it certainly would apply for a father. And a friend of our family had a recent realization. She would go to her mother when she was upset about things, and her mother was, I guess, more like the traditional male, she would just want to fix it and was just missing her. What our friend wanted was just emotional support. And suddenly she had the realization that it was like going to the hardware store for milk. And you go to the hardware store and say, can I have some milk? We don't have milk here. And then you go home, and then a week later she goes back to the hardware store. I'd like some milk. We're the hardware store. So I thought that was a powerful realization she had.
To be able to realize that both parents are not going to have the same skill set to be able to connect with you. And I think that's part of the work, too, is to keep reaching out. As Malia said, like, keep trying, keep reaching out. And some point it comes through. Kelly, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Hi, thanks for having me on. I think that the aspect of today's show that's hit me the most is, Elizabeth, your question of how do we not feel overwhelmed by kind of the doom and gloom of our day and age.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm calling in as obviously a daughter who, and I idolize my dad. I think one way to tackle that kind of overwhelming emotion of our time is instilling confidence and, you know, the confidence to speak out against high-profile celebrities, the confidence to maybe tackle tough environmental problems as a scientist. And a few ways that my dad did that for me and instilling confidence as a youth and then into my adulthood, you know, he never questioned my ability to do things. He always held me to the same standard as my brother, for example. You know, we'd all take care of the family animals together. We all had similar tasks like loading wood and cutting wood, and my brother never had jobs that were different from mine necessarily in our day-to-day living. But also being part of things that were bigger than us, like getting out and experiencing nature, and like in the case of Malia, taking care of animals, being a part of something that was bigger than ourselves.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, and Kelly, I'm sorry I have to cut you a little short because we're running out of time, but I appreciate you taking the time to call, and I love what you're talking about to help our daughters and our sons moving forward is to be active, to move forward and not retreat. So I want to thank Dr. Eric Simon and Malia for coming and being my guests today. Malia's book is called Both Hands for Me. And Malia, how can people find your book if they'd like to read it?
Amazon ebook and paperback. So.
And if you'd like to find out any more about the show, you can find us on our Facebook page, A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Previous shows are at kcbx.org under the News Talk tab, and you can podcast at Apple Tunes. And you can send me a message to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And because we didn't get to go over the list of some suggestions for ways that fathers can reach out and interact with their daughters, I'm going to post this list on my Facebook page if you'd like to check it out. And as always, I appreciate you being part of the conversation. I look forward to continuing next week wherever the journey takes us. As always, we appreciate you supporting Public Radio KCBX.
I know a girl. She puts the color inside of my world. But she's just like a maze, where all of the walls all continually change. And I've done all I can to stand on the steps with my heart in my hand. Now I'm starting to see, maybe it's got nothing to do with me. Fathers, be good to your daughters. Daughters will love like you do. Girls become lovers who turn into mothers. So mothers, be good to your daughters too. Oh, you see that skin?
same she's been standing in since the day she saw him walking away. Now she's left cleaning up the mess he made. So fathers, be good to your daughters. Daughters will love like you do. Girls become lovers who turn into mothers. So mothers, be good to your daughters too. Boys, you can pray. You'll find out how much they can take. Boys will be strong, and boys soldier on. But boys won't be gone without warmth from a woman's good heart. Daughters too. So mothers, be good to your daughters too.